From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Protests in Nigeria against police violence continue to escalate as increasing numbers of people are killed over a notorious law enforcement unit. Members of the Special Anti-Robbery Squad, or SARS, have come under fire from the public for brutal acts of violence. On October 20th, at a major End SARS protest, armed forces shot into crowds, killing more than a dozen people. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari spoke to his nation, calling on young people to, quote, discontinue the street protests and constructively engage the government in finding solutions. He said, "Your voice has been heard loud and clear, and we are responding." After coming under fire for failing to mention the killings, he recently admitted that nearly 70 people have been killed during the protests. My guest is Adote Akwe. He is the Deputy Director for Advocacy and Government Relations for Amnesty International USA. Welcome to the program, Adote.
Thank you very much for having me.
So first, before we get into the violence, let's talk about why people are calling for an end to SARS. What is the Special Anti-Robbery Squad? How long has it been around for? Why was it formed?
The SARS unit is a special initiative of the Buhari administration. So it has it goes back to the beginning of his term, the Fourth Republic in 2018. And right from the get-go, it was a unit that seemed to operate above the law. It was associated with incidents of extrajudicial execution, torture, arbitrary detention, corruption. And that triggered protests in the general public in 2018, which initially led to some promises from the Buhari administration about reforms and accountability that led to nothing. Now, the problem is that the SARS unit is the poster child for the Nigerian police, which has a very bad human rights record going back decades. Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and many Nigerian human rights organizations have documented major abuses, systemic abuses, similar to what I mentioned earlier. So there's been a real frustration and anger at policing in Nigeria going back several decades. But the SARS unit seemed to be a step too far. And that is, I think, what sort of triggered or at least catalyzed such a spread in the protests.
What are protesters accusing the SARS unit of having done? Can you give us some specifics?
Well, they have, they're obviously caught on videotape as killing the gentleman in the Lekki, in October 18th on the who was involved in a protest calling for SARS accountability. Amnesty and others have documented them being involved in the cutting of closed-circuit TV cameras around the Lekki Bridge, where the incidents that you mentioned on the 20th happened, where there were reports, where they shot into the general nonviolent protesting groups of people. And they're also even, have been involved in the arrest of a noted human rights journalist, Omoyele Sowore, where the SARS police, despite two court orders, refused to release him on bail and then tried to rearrest him in the courtroom. So that shows you the kind of brazen impunity that they seem to feel and display in their operation.
There's a special anti-robbery squad. Presumably, they've been put into place to deal with things like robberies.
That is correct. There's no question that that Lagos has had and continues to have major issues with crime. But when your police are more feared than the criminals themselves, which is one of the things that people are really frustrated about, then you know that you have a problem. And I think that's why when the government announced that it was disbanding the SARS unit, but then simply reassigning its members to other police units around the country without answering any questions of accountability for past abuses, any changes in policing, any oversight whatsoever. I think that's when the public said enough is enough and began to really go out into the streets, taking their lives literally into their own hands, given how the police had responded prior.
So you have the police, and specifically the police unit SARS, committing violence. People go out and protest, and then you have the military responding to those protests, killing, what, at least dozens of people. So essentially, security forces ranging from law enforcement to the military are trying to, you know, shut people's protests down.
This is absolutely right. When people now talk about end SARS, they're not just talking about the SARS unit. They're talking about policing, and in many cases, they're also talking about security forces in general. The security forces in Nigeria, the military, have also been linked with egregious human rights abuses, including torture, including extrajudicial executions. And they've also been involved, as you know, in the counterinsurgency against the group Boko Haram. And one of the things that the tactics that they have employed has been to starve Boko Haram. They destroy villages, and in doing so, they destroy livelihoods. So Nigeria now has several million people, over 2 million people who are displaced because of this insurgency. And that's not to say that they're not scared and fleeing Boko Haram, but they're now also fleeing from the military. So the End SARS movement is really about security force accountability, starting with SARS.
What about President Buhari? I mentioned that after the major killing where military forces fired into crowds, killing at least a dozen people, he basically called on protesters to stop protesting, didn't even mention the killings, but now he has admitted that dozens of people have been killed. How are Nigerians responding? Is he so intimately linked, given that it was he who started SARS, is his political power in question right now?
I don't think his power is in question, but I do think that the initial response really sort of reminded people of what we're facing. President Buhari is a former general, a former head of state. So during his tenure as the head of state of Nigeria, there were incredible brutal crackdowns on journalists and civil society. So when the civilian version of Buhari was elected, many people were concerned as to what was going to happen with human rights and the rule of law and civic space. And so the admonition or the very stern rule of law speech that he gave last week sort of set a very chilling tone. And he also seemed to be expecting the governors of Nigeria's states to follow the line and also crack down. The subsequent correction where he acknowledged that people had been killed is probably the least that we could have hoped for in terms of correcting what could potentially be an escalating confrontation. The question now is whether he's actually going to move forward in trying to meet with and move forward on any of the protesters and their demands. And again, the track record is not very encouraging because there have been over 20 different commissions of inquiry into security force abuses that have not, and the reports have not seen the light of day.
What is the actual toll of violence aimed at the End SARS movement? And I should say that there are people in the Nigerian diaspora around the world joining in these protests. But of course, those who are in Nigeria, particularly in Lagos, have been on the front lines. Buhari said 69 people had been killed. Is that an accurate figure?
No, I think we are still trying to ascertain exact numbers, but I think the 69 figure is probably a low estimate. The police routinely disappear people, and we do not find out whether they are alive or not until several weeks later. And there's been very, very little transparency in terms of access to journalists, because journalists themselves are being targeted, as you know. Many of the reporters have not only had their equipment destroyed and have been detained, but some of them have also been injured by the use of live ammunition. So I think this is why one of the clear demands is not only that the security forces should respect the right to nonviolent protest and stand back, but there also has to be accountability for the protests and for the victims of police crackdowns for the end SARS period, but that separate from the accountability for previous abuses.
Let's talk about the United States and its role. The U.S. has had, of course, a role in a variety of African nations. It has provided arms to many of them. Does the Nigerian military, do even the SARS units, officers, use weapons provided by the U.S. or sold by the U.S.?
I think this is now going to be put into the spotlight. The security assistance that the United States provides is more to the military and its counterinsurgency against Boko Haram, because it is seen as a strategic front in its the U.S. war on terrorism. The Nigerian police assistance may be coming from different places. Certainly, there have been programs in the past where the United States has offered police training to professionalize and encourage adherence to civilian oversight and the rule of law. But I think those things are now going to be scrutinized by members of Congress, because it would be terrible, not to mention a violation of U.S. law, if U.S. assistance was being used to commit human rights abuses by the Nigerian police.
Is there an effort in Congress? I mean, I know there's so much happening in the U.S. right now, or around the corner from the U.S. election, but is there any effort in Congress for there to be some sort of inquiry about linking, or at least examining where the U.S. provided arms are going?
Well, right now, the members of Congress have really spoken up about protecting and ceasing the crackdowns on the protests immediately. And so that's been, I think, the first sort of wave of response. I think, like you said, we're unfortunately literally in the end run to the presidential elections. And so the question now is going to be whether there is sustained energy and interest from Congress, and ideally on the Department of State and the Trump administration, to look at what kind of assistance they're giving to the police, and to also continue the pressure trying to make sure that there's no further crackdowns. I think that you're going to see leadership coming from both the Senate and the House. And I think that that's going to be sort of amplified by civil society groups and diaspora groups in the United States mobilizing to sort of raise the awareness that, this is a window in Nigeria that shouldn't be missed. Here's an opportunity to really improve policing with human dignity and respect for rights at the center of their operations. And we all can't afford to let that be missed.
How significant are the end SARS protests? The BBC noted that the end SARS protests have changed Nigeria forever. There is a lot of evidence showing that this is very much a youth-led movement, one which even finds its inspiration, or among its inspiration, the Black Lives Matter movement here in the United States. Tell me more about that.
I think there's no question that the events in the United States have put policing and police abuses in the spotlight in many countries around the world. First, there was a wave of solidarity actions and condemnation. There was a genuine emotional outrage, I think, that was expressed.
So in Nigeria, there was solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement?
Absolutely, yes. Amazing. There were definitely, and the irony, of course, was that there were many African governments and the African Union that expressed concern and condemnation of the murder of George Floyd and others. So I think with the advent and accessibility of social media, the energy and messaging and the efforts that were met here in the United States with violence sort of carried over, and I think met ongoing efforts in different countries in Africa, including Nigeria. And I think when the SARS announcement came that it was being disbanded, but there were not going to be any questions or not going to be any accountability, I think there was definitely a change in, well, that's not good enough. In other words, people said, we're going to go out and protest. And the Nigerian military continued its old business as usual approach, which is crackheads, arrest, and break the spirit of the protesters. I think your point is right that this is indeed a generational change in terms of who is spearheading and speaking up. And it's obviously, I think, going to give it a broader base inside Nigeria, as well as in the diaspora here, where the Nigerian, the last time the Nigerian diaspora was really mobilized was around the Bring Back Our Girls movement, of course, the Chibok girls who were abducted by Boko Haram. So I do think that we've reached a new place. The question is whether we can make the Nigerian government realize that as well and move through the door towards more accountability, more transparency, and reform.
Now, are women involved as well? Is this a movement that where women are playing a big role?
They are, because women are also equally at risk. In fact, they're at risk of gender-based violence, casual, shall we say, approaches that are rebuffed, and then suddenly they're in trouble for being, seen as rude or outspoken. And in fact, there's one particular case where the four market people in one part of the country were subsequently stopped at a checkpoint after one of the women had been approached by a military police officer, and then subsequently all of them were killed. So those kinds of cases, are going to start to come up. They're going to be questions about, well, what happened to these officers that were involved? What happened to the case? As I said, the Nigerian government has done many, many commissions of inquiry where people were brave enough to step forward and testify, and it led to nothing. I think this time around, it's all going to come to a head where there's going to be, we want accountability, or we will go back to the streets.
And I understand that women are very much among the victims of the SARS officers themselves. They've been raped and murdered.
Yes. The SARS, as I said, the SARS unit really is should be a warning example of what happens when there's no accountability, no capacity or willingness to initiate reform, and then as was planned by the Buhari administration, they were just going to be reassigned to other units around the country, which would have been terrible.
Now, when the military responded with violence, killing dozens of people, at least 69 people, but likely that's an underestimate, how have protesters responded? Has it sent a chilling effect on the streets of Lagos, or are people undeterred? Are you seeing protests continue in as great numbers as before, or maybe fewer numbers or more?
I think it's a mixture. It varies. There are groups that are asking people to be careful and not to put themselves at risk. Some of the women, there's a women's organization that literally issued a guidance saying, please be, respect the curfews, because they don't want any more bloodshed. But I do think that the movements and the protests are spreading. They may not be in the same numbers, but I do think that this is not going to subside. And certainly Lagos, even if it does quiet down for a couple of days, will be very much an epicenter, because of course that's where the killing of the gentleman triggered literally the protests.
Now, President Buhari was reelected in 2019, early 2019. How long is his term? Does he face a challenge in the next election? I imagine that his leadership in this moment makes his makes his any future political power less possible, or maybe he's term limited.
He is term limited. He is. Old, and his health is not quite as strong. I think the question, of course, is what the opposition party of Good Luck Jonathan will come to rally around, and who they will put forward as the successor to lead their campaign efforts. But the Buhari's vice president is considered to be a strong candidate. But I think one thing that that many people are also thinking is whether this is not only a challenge for all of the political elites in Nigeria in terms of, you know, frustration with corruption, frustration with, you know, a lack of access to living wages, or the police brutality that this protest is around. There are some serious questions now that are being posed by the Nigerian public that may not be as easily settled by a simple election. And I think that's got to have everybody paying attention to what happens with this particular response by Buhari and what that indicates in terms of better accountability in the Fourth Republic.
Give out a website, Adote, for where people can find out more about the work that Amnesty is doing in Nigeria.
Yes, they can go to www.amnesty.org and type Nigeria, and they will basically be linked to the Global Movement's website, and where they can, and they will get all of the different campaigning materials. There's a petition that people can sign in calling for police reform and an end to SARS. There's also all of our reports and our statements, which will be updated. And we're also going to have other resources posted on the U.S. version of that, which is www.amnestyusa.org. So you can go to either one to learn more and become engaged.
That's amnesty.org or amnestyusa.org, or I should say, and amnestyusa.org. Adote, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
My guest has been Adote Akwe. He is the Deputy Director for Advocacy and Government Relations for Amnesty International USA. We've been discussing ongoing violence in Nigeria aimed at the End SARS protests. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.